Well, hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show, streaming live from BBS in California, and being joined today by a beautiful guest who I will introduce in just a moment. Hello, Kara, Kara. Which way do we pronounce it?
It's Kara.
Kara Kenish. So I'll do her formal
Kara,
introduction
yes.
in just a moment. So glad that you could join me. If you're listening to this show as the first time and wondering what it's all about, the Words, Women, and Wisdom show is a show that's been running for the last couple of years, designed to showcase women that have typically risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph and are now out there doing amazing things in the world that are worth showcasing. And I love diving in with women, women entrepreneurs, women in mission-inspired businesses, and women who have compassionate hearts and understand the full value of living a deep and rich and purposeful life, and also a life in service. So today we're going to dive in and have a really intriguing story. A little bit of background, the reason I do these shows. I'm also someone who is risen from tragedy to triumph myself, with an upbringing that was in England with a very mean father who had PTSD, came back from the war with PTSD, and literally drained the dignity right out of my mum. So my life now is all about uplifting the spirit of humanity, one person at a time, and working with my coaching clients, with my mentoring clients, with my best-selling book, radio show, etc., to really spread the word about what's possible when women get focused and passionate and have a mission that is bigger than just themselves. So I'm so glad to bring Kara to the stage here today. So just a little bit about her. She is a third generation Tim Hortons franchisee out in Ontario and Canada, with a desire to help change the world. So she's determined to use that unique platform to make a difference in her community, both locally and also internationally. She's had some athletic history, which we're going to dive into today. And that gives her the opportunity to share her story with young girls across Canada, representing the Tim Hortons franchise and brand in their collaboration. And oh, this looks like an interesting story with Barbie and the Dream Gap. You can be anything, and one of a kind Barbie campaigns. We will definitely dive into that. So there is some personal trauma, and there is also some beautiful examples today that we'll share on rising through these things. And we had a conversation a little while ago, and I was very intrigued because some of the things that you draw upon in your history were things that were really challenging that I think a lot of women will associate with. They either have been through it themselves or they know someone who has. And it gives a deep appreciation for your guts and your commitment to being a strong female role model. And I'm so delighted that you are here, pulling up your panties and moving forward. So, let's dive in. So, currently, Tim Hortons franchisee, tell me more about how that got started, and then we'll do a little bit of the backstory too.
Okay, so Tim Hortons, it's been in my family for over 50 years. My grandparents actually owned the second Tim Hortons ever, and my parents obviously followed suit, and I did as well. Now, I can remember being 4 years old and sitting in kindergarten class and sitting there cross-legged, and it was Grandparents' Day, or bring your grandparents to school day. And I can remember my grandfather sitting, or sorry, at the front of the classroom and talking about how he had been a police officer and how he left that to become a Tim Hortons franchisee. And at 4 years old, I don't have many memories from being 4 years old, but I can remember sitting there and just knowing that that was what I wanted to do and that I wanted to follow in that family history, that family footsteps. And honestly, like I love my brand. I love my team. I love the industry. I'm such a people person. So having the opportunity to share morning coffees with everyone is probably one of my favorite things.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because you mentioned about your grandfather being a police officer previously. And I think about, Dragon's Den, which I, love watching, and Gym Tree Living. you know, who was, again, a police officer formerly and then went on to be the big brand owner for Pizza Hut franchise, amongst other things. So, sorry, Pizza Hut? Boston Pizza. So, I mean, certainly some commonalities between dealing with the public in unusual, tragic circumstances and managing the staffing of a busy Tim Hortons restaurant and also all of the different clientele that you have coming through. So great background, I would think, to be very successful in that area. So again, a great example there of role modeling, where you saw it happening in your family, decided that was what you wanted to do, got passionate about it. Now you're using that as a platform. So you also had an athletic history. So let's dive in a little bit to that, because I know you had a really interesting story about the challenges of women and the weight classes as well.
Yes. So I have always been an athlete my entire life. I'm just a natural athlete, but I was very competitive in judo, along with hockey. I played rep hockey and cross country, you know, you name it. I pretty much played it. But my history with judo, now this is a sport that I love so much and I speak so highly of it. The strength, the confidence, everything there, you know, there are so many pros that it gave me. But now I started young and my first national competition, I was 12 years old and I was a tiny tot, just a little thing. I fought minus 40 kilograms. And you can imagine being a 12-year-old girl who growing and developing so much at that point. Now we qualify for these competitions. We had qualified in the fall and the nationals wasn't until the spring. So trying to maintain a weight of minus 40 kilograms, you know, at that age where you're growing so much, was really challenging. And I can remember on the day or the day before competition, I was allowed a grape for dinner. No water, no anything. I couldn't even brush my teeth for fear that that little extra water would add to my weight because I was sitting just above. And now, obviously, in any competitive sport, you get penalized if you can't compete, if you don't make those weight categories. So, you know, as years go on, I think I used to compete at that level until I was about 19. But all through high school, all through my teenage years, obviously as I grew, my weight classes changed. But, and I say this in reflection more than anything, but I knew what I weighed from the second I woke up until the second I went to bed. I knew exactly how much I was going to gain if I ate, let's say, a sandwich or a slice of pizza, or if I drank that water bottle, I knew how much I was going to gain. On the adverse side of it, I knew also how much I was going to lose if I went to the washroom or, you know, I had to go pee. But, you know, we, one of these things that really, you know, I think, it really traumatized me. I hate to say it. It's a little bit of something that has kind of stuck with me for my life. But when we had competition days, we used to go into, before weigh-ins, we would go into the sauna and we would put on our winter coats, like layers and layers of clothing, our winter coats and a garbage bag. And we would jog on the spot in a sauna. So obviously you can imagine how hot that would be in order to sweat out those last couple of pounds before we could go to our weigh-ins. Now, you can just imagine being, you know, a teenage girl and having to worry about how much you're going to weigh consistently. And I never thought of it as a bad thing until obviously as an adult, I can reflect and I look back and realize how much that actually impacted my life and the way that I ate and the way that I even, you know, managed my days and my routines. And a perfect example, I just had another shoulder surgery about 6 weeks ago. And I can remember, I said to the nurse, I was like, please don't tell me what I weigh. I haven't known what I've weighed since, you know, those days, because it's such a rabbit hole. You know, once you know, you kind of go down that path. So I asked the nurse, I was like, please don't tell me. So she didn't, whatever. But then I get my package of, you know, all the information that you need for a surgery. And right there on the front page is my weight, my height, my body mass index. And I looked at it and immediately I was like, oh my gosh, that's what I weigh. That's like, okay, what can I change? How can I lose that weight? Like, why do I weigh that much? And it was just such a natural, horrible reaction. I actually had a meltdown over it. And it took, I actually don't want to admit that, because as a grown woman, I don't want to have a meltdown over my weight, but it's something that I haven't known in 15 years. And just seeing it, it was like, it brought me right back to those days. And obviously I weigh more than I did back then. You know, I'm not a teenage girl anymore, but it brought me right back to those days. Like, okay, what do I have to do? What do I have to change? What am I doing wrong in my routine, my diet, you know, everything. And so I had this little mini meltdown, and then I really actually had to step back and be like, Cara, like, you're a grown woman. These things don't matter. Are you healthy? Do you feel healthy? And I had to really rein myself in and be like, it's okay. It's fine. Like, a weight is just a number. It's actually something I don't think any of us should ever look at. But I didn't realize how much it still affected me until that moment. So
I think that's so interesting. And one of the reasons I wanted to showcase your story, because you're certainly not alone as a teenage girl in being very conscious of your weight. Now, in your case, you were doing it for kind of like, you know, good reasons, right? Because you were competing, you needed to be at a certain weight in order for you to be able to continue to compete. However, there are so many teenage girls that their focus is on it for completely different reasons. And I think that when it's very much more about the image and the, you know, being liked, being popular, you know, being skinny and popular with the guys, I think it has a whole different energy. It's like an energy of obligation versus an energy of choice and opportunity. So So I commend you for maintaining that opportunity to compete for all of those years. Did you say that you were talking about having a grape for supper? Like one grape?
Yes, one grape.
Wow.
One little baby grape.
Wow. So very, very finely tuned. And obviously it served you well in terms of your competitions and your results. And it's so interesting now that that one thing can trigger. And did trigger you recently. And so many of our childhood experiences, I think it, you know, it just goes to show that the work is never done, right? We're always continuing, like a rose, to open, and to continue to go deeper and deeper within and get to know ourselves better, get to know what triggers us, what elates us. And when we can show up knowing comfortably, I'm seeing that same pattern arising. It's where we can really step into our power and make much more important choices, which is, of course, the elements that go into, you know, being resilient, making positive choices, which is, you know, what leads to confidence. So thank you for sharing about that. And I heard you saying something about, you know, was I doing it wrong? And again, wrong is one of those words where I was actually just doing the audio recording for my book. So my book is a bestseller from 2018 October, in currently in paperback format and also ebook. And this last couple of weeks, I've been recording it as an audio book because I had a few friends who are dyslexic, and also was thinking, you know, in this big world of diversity now, I would hate that people that don't have great eyesight couldn't have an opportunity to also share from, you know, and benefit from this wisdom, because there's a lot of those women that also need more confidence in particular and can use their words much more articulately to get what they want and do it in a way which is collaborative and connected and serves everybody. So doing it wrong, that's an interesting phrase, isn't it?
I honestly didn't even notice that I said that, which is funny because it just goes to show that our words have power and they have impact. And I didn't even notice, but it is interesting. Yeah. And it's unfortunate in a sense as well, because, you know, what could we, you know, why do we consider it wrong, I suppose?
Yeah. And the reason I bring that up is not because I'm saying, oh, that's not, you know, that's a bad thing to say. The reason I'm bringing it up is put the spotlight on it to say, ladies, how you measure success is completely up to you. It's not somebody else's measure. It's not mm-hmm. whether we weigh a certain weight. It's not whether we, you know, get up at a certain time of day. It's not based on the measure of, you know, how much is in our bank account. I mean, those are all contributing factors that will give us that sense of calm because we know that we have the resources available. We have the fitness level available. We have the time available for our kids. But how we measure success, I think, is something that women need to get really comfortable with defining for themselves. My definition is this. When I have this amount of self-care time, when I'm managing my family and seeing the response from my family, my kids are growing, they're thriving, they're contributing members in society, that I'm actually able to get my work done within, you know, 3 hours or 4 days a week, whatever it might be. And then the measures of success have to become each very, very individual. Otherwise, we're setting ourselves up for failure if we're living on someone else's terms. Does that make sense?
I love so much that you said that. I agree fully. I recently have actually stepped back and just reevaluated what I consider my personal success. And I think that it's a practice that everyone really should do, because otherwise, to your point, we're setting ourselves up for failure if we're trying to reach somebody else's goals. So, I love that for sure.
So you had also some personal trauma a few years ago that you shared with me in some of our show notes, talking about a European vacation and what happened afterwards. And I love to hear the stories, and then I love to hear the learnings that came out of that. So are you open to diving into that story too, and what you learned from that?
Absolutely. So this one, it hits home. And, you know, I think... So to give the whole story or the backstory, we all know that relationships, marriage, everything, it takes work. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of work, and it's constantly evolving and growing. And my husband and I, we went on this gorgeous, gorgeous European vacation, kind of a no expenses spared. We went to amazing dinners, stayed in beautiful hotels. You know, we just kind of did everything that we wanted to do. And, you know, we connected, we had such amazing conversation. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the show, but like amazing, we had amazing sex, we had amazing, just conversation. We had so much fun. I laughed the whole time. It was a blast. And, you know, just one of those holidays where you come back and you just are so in love with your partner. Mm-hmm. Yes, completely. It was, you know, that little getaway that we all need, because we get caught up with the day-to-day. To your point, family, especially, we are a very athletic family, so we're constantly at the arena, we're constantly on the go, on the move, and working, and all of that. So I believe everybody needs that time to kind of step back and reconnect, right? So we were on this holiday. It was amazing. We had a bit of a hiccup where our passports actually got stolen. So, yeah, I know it was horrible. Don't recommend that. Look after your passports at all costs. But we got through that too. Even that in itself was a growing moment where we were terrified. You know, we ended up trapped there for an extra handful of days, and the costs associated with that as well, because we missed flights, we missed everything that goes with that. Amazing vacation, you know, we come home feeling just on my end, you know, so in love. You kind of fall back into that routine of back into sports, back into life. But, I felt so content and so happy. So, about a month later, I can remember this so vividly. I was rushing. I was on the way to a meeting with my management team and just printing off the agenda. And literally 2 minutes later, I would have been gone and out the door. And I can remember my husband, he walked home, he came in and he called my name and he came and sat down beside me. And just the energy, it was almost like the air was sucked out of the room. Mm-hmm. And he sat down and he was like, "We need to talk." And I was like, you know, and in my head, I'm like, okay, whatever. But like, I have a meeting, like I'm late, I gotta go. And he's like, no. He's like, "You're not going and we need to talk." So he tells me that he no longer loves me and that he's going to, that he's leaving pretty much. And, you know, I'm shocked. I'm completely shocked because we've just gotten back from this holiday. Everything seems amazing. And, you know, my heart is just dropped and I'm shaking and I'm trying to understand what I missed. Like, what have I missed? And he's like, you know, I just don't love you anymore. This is, you know, this isn't working. No, those were the words he used. This isn't working. And I was just like, but what do you mean? Like, we haven't talked. So obviously in a relationship, communication goes both ways, right? And if there's something wrong, you would hope that your partner, you could talk about it as something that gets discussed. So here I am not believing that anything is wrong in my marriage at all, especially after this this holiday. And anyways, we just talked about it and I was like, okay, well, you know, if something's bothering you, like, let's talk about this. What do you mean it's over? So a little bit of deep diving. Finally, he just exasperated, said, "I've been having an affair. I'm leaving you for," it was his coworker, this girl that we were actually going to her wedding in a couple of weeks. So, you know, anyways, that's aside from the point, but, it just hit me. So, he had already packed his bags. He had already gone to a lawyer. He had already gotten another place to stay. And, he walked out that day. I have never felt so helpless, I think is like the best word I can use to describe it. It was just that shock, that, that everything. So we have a daughter as well. And that day he decided that, yeah, he was no longer going to be a husband. He was no longer going to be a father. He just walked. And that was kind of it. So there I was, left with my world crumbling on every side of me. And, you know, again, I'm trying to run a business. I'm trying to do all of these things. Somehow in the meantime, I had sent my management team a 911 text being like, "Emergency, can't make it." And, I just sat there and all I could do, because there was no fighting, there was no wanting him to stay. He had made his choice and it was literally just letting everything collapse around me and watching him walk out that door. So
how did you manage to get through that in the next, you know, few days, few weeks? And what is it that you can share with other women that may be listening to this? Because that is not an isolated case. I mean, I've certainly heard of other situations where someone is blindsided with the actions of someone else. And how do you pick up the pieces? What did you learn about yourself there?
Oh my gosh. And I love so much that you asked that, because I think that's the best part of all of this. So in those moments, I had two options. I was either going to let that define who I was going to be, or I could use that as an opportunity to become the woman that I've always wanted to be. And obviously, so I chose the latter. But in those initial moments, once kind of that shock settled in, I had my support team. I think my house within an hour was full of my parents, my siblings, my best friends. It was just like that whole support team just came crashing in. I had no choice. And I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried. And I don't think I slept for 3 days, and definitely consumed a little bit too much wine. And I won't say that I had a pity party. It was not a pity party. It was very much a just shock and, you know, trying to wrap my head around all of it. And then in those days afterwards, I was just like, I knew I wasn't going to fight for him. He was somebody who had chosen a new path, and now I'm on my new path. So in those days, I am actually, truthfully, I'm so proud of myself. And just in those moments, you know, recognizing the pain, acknowledging the hurt, and also just being able to move forward and asking for help. I decided immediately that I was going to take the high road every step of the way. What was the point? You know, here's my opportunity to become the woman that I want to be. So why muddle it with pettiness, you know, anger, frustrations? Like, don't get me wrong, please. I think it's natural that all of those things came out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I let it go to the wayside. We had I never saw him again until we were in court, the lawyers. And, you know, even in those moments, I kept it extremely amicable. I was just like, you know, we just let everything go 50-50, because all I wanted to focus on at that point was letting him go and closing off that chapter and focusing on moving forward. You know, it's the strength. You don't realize how strong you are until you have no choice but to be. I think it's Meghan Markle that says it best, something to do with a woman. You don't realize how strong she is until you put her in hot water. Anyways, if I screwed that up, but I really think, yeah, like a tea bag. Yes, women are like tea bags. You don't know how strong they are until you put them in hot water. That's it. Exactly. And it was in those moments that I realized the actual strength that I had, because now I had to also stand up for my daughter, who, you know, to this day, she still deals with abandonment issues because this person just chose not to be in her life anymore. And she, you know, she's a teenager, but she still holds that. So I had to be strong for her and I had to be strong for me. But I really relied on my support team, because in those moments, as much as I wanted to be strong for her, I couldn't. I had to be strong for myself first. It's very much the analogy of an airplane and airbags, right? You put your own on before you can help anybody else. And I really focused on that. Honestly, just again, and I haven't talked about this in a really long time, so it is bringing up a little bit of emotion, but just the strength and the resiliency that we are all capable of, I think it blows your mind for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love some of the things you shared in that story, because, you know, having your support team, it's absolutely critical. I talk about this in my book as well, is don't wait until an emergency happens to have all of your support team, like names, phone numbers, contact information, like have it on a sticky note on your fridge, somewhere where other people can get at it as well. Because if you're, I mean, say it was the case of you, in the case of the surgery, right? So maybe somebody needed to reach out to your family because, something happened in surgery, right? You're not going to be able to do that right then and there. So if your family or your other, your daughter has that information ready to go, it's so much easier for someone else to jump in and help you when you're not able to do that. The other thing is to come up with some really positive phrases that you can, again, put on a sticky note, put it in your drawer, put it somewhere where you can find it easily, and make that when you're up here. When you're super proud, you're elated, something amazing has happened, don't wait till you're down in the dumps, because you won't be able to think about something positive then. So do it when you're up here, right? And then it'll pull you up. It's like, you know, positive energy drawing you back up again. Also, you know, the value of a support team, acknowledging the pain, but choosing the high road. Absolutely. We can't control what other people do. What we can control, though, is how we choose to respond. And you chose to take the high road and to let that be a trigger to redefine yourself. Awesome. So your daughter's 14. Your current dream is to build your Tim Hortons empire, to empower women specifically through leadership and sport, to be a change maker in this world through your philanthropic efforts, all supporting equal opportunity with the Tim Hortons Foundation Camps, Empowerment Squared, and the Grindstone Awards. I'm not sure I know about those other ones. Can you share a little bit about, you know, what is some of that philanthropic work that you're doing with those other groups?
Absolutely. I had to step back and really kind of consider why I was so passionate about these organizations in particular and specifically. And at the end of the day, what I realized is that they all stand for equal opportunity. So Empowerment Squared, they are actually my Smile Cookie recipients. So in Tim Hortons in Canada, we have our Smile Cookie Week, and it's that all proceeds go to local organizations and supporting our own communities. So my restaurant, we actually placed second in Canada for top sales, or second in Tim Hortons for top cookie sales. So it's a competition that I'm super proud of and that I love so much. Thank you. But Empowerment Squared, so they definitely provide equal opportunity for, you know, schooling and education. And they really focus on newcomer and marginalized families. And you know, the work that they're doing, I think, is just incredible. And so they do a lot in, you know, my city, but also across Canada. And they're building the first learning center in Liberia as well. And that's in connection with the United Nations and like their standards. So I do a lot of work with them. And then the Grindstone Awards, they provide grants for girls who want to play hockey. And obviously with my athletic history, you know, I connected with them actually after the Tim Hortons and Barbie campaign. And it was something that I'm super passionate about because I believe that everyone should have an opportunity to, obviously education, you know, first and foremost, but to follow their passions, whether it's through sports or whether it's through the arts or whatever their passions and their hobbies are, because I know how much that has personally changed my life and really helped me develop the woman that I am. So without those opportunities, you know, can you be the best version of yourself? So, you know, that's kind of why I fell into these ones in particular. The people are incredible in all of the organizations. So that makes a big difference when we all share the same goals, the same values, and the same, you know, willingness to make that impact for sure.
Absolutely. And I think it was, it was Viktor Frankl in his, I know it's not Woman's Search for Meaning, it's Man's Search for Meaning, his famous book, but as a Hungarian? Don't quote me on that. As a previous psychologist who ended up being interned in concentration camp for many, many years and having a lot of time on his hands, obviously, for reflection, he was the one who identified that to live a really purposeful life, you need to have a goal that's bigger than just yourself. And any time that I've done volunteering on boards or volunteering for different conferences and projects, it's just so rewarding. And I frequently used to reference that when I was working in human resources roles, and have students come in and say, well, I don't have that experience yet. And because I don't have the experience, I can't get a job in that. And then I'll never get the experience. And I'm sort of stuck in this cycle. And I always used to say, like, go find a place to volunteer. You'll get the experience. You might not get paid for it, but I tell you what, everybody in there is like on this level playing field, and they'll appreciate the work you do, the dedication. You can pick up the skills, practice and learn and develop those in a safe environment, and then bring them to work and then bring them to add to your resume. So thank you for your caring dedication to those efforts. I am intrigued to hear more about the Barbie campaign with the Dream Gap. And what was that all about? Because I think even though I'm a Tim Hortons drinker, have that every morning in my coffee machine, I think I missed that.
Love it. Yeah, no, that's okay. I can't speak too much to it. My entire story that I shared through that is in the hands of Barbies, and it has not been released yet. Okay. But what we did is we partnered with Barbie and showcased, let me backtrack just a second. So Barbie has the one-of-a-kind Barbie campaign.
Yeah.
And there are now 50 unique Barbies that have ever been done. So two of our girls from Team Canada, so Sarah Nurse and Marie-Philippe Poulin. Marie-Philippe, she is the captain of Team Canada, but both of them got their own one-of-a-kind Barbie. and such an amazing experience, especially to be one of 50. But only there have only been three in Canada so far, and Tessa Virtue was the other one.
Right.
But as part of this campaign, so Tim Hortons, we partnered with Barbie, and then obviously showcasing these two hockey players. But we were selling the Barbies in our restaurants, and they were also available in toy stores across Canada.
Right.
But the proceeds from these dolls all went to supporting girls hockey. I'm not going to say the name of it because I'm going to screw it up, but girls hockey in Canada anyways, and it got divvied out otherwise. But the really cool part, my role and my really cool experience of it was that I was asked to represent Tim Hortons and present both of these girls with their unique one-of-a-kind Barbie doll. So it was supposed to be at the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. It was going to be this beautiful event. But with the pandemic, we ended up just doing it over Zoom. But I had the opportunity to share my story and just... I grew up playing boys hockey. So back in the day when I was little, I played boys hockey right through until I was about 16. But I was the only girl on the team. And then as I grew up, got a little bit older, I was the only girl in the league for a little while. And that included playing full contact. So my story was unique in the sense that the Barbie campaign is to help more girls play hockey, where I played boys hockey because I didn't have a girls team to go to. So if I wanted to play, it was to join the local league. Now, that being said, those experiences, those friendships, I have supporters to this day. I still get comments from friends that, you know, boys that would protect me and have my back and that were on my teams in those moments. I'm getting off topic, but
brothers, right?
I know. And yeah, exactly. It's like having, you know, 100 brothers that all wanted to protect me and look after me. So I'm so thankful for that. But yeah, so as for the campaign, I had the opportunity to share my story. And I really just wanted to encourage girls to continue to play, whether they were playing in a girls' league or a boys' league or, you know, whatever it was. But to take those lessons, you know, you learn so much from the camaraderie, from the sportsmanship and again, from both, right? I wouldn't change the lessons I learned from the boys for anything. But then when I switched over to girls, I didn't realize how much of that camaraderie that I had been missing.
Yeah.
So, and I say that, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, thinking about my youth, I mean, I was very sporty. I loved when, you know, physical education class came on versus science or math or biology or any of those things. And I was in the netball team, the which is like, you know, kind of like basketball, but for girls, more for okay. girls. And then they have field hockey in England that has kind of like a curly stick, kind of like an upside down candy cane. However, apparently I was so aggressive on the field wanting to win so badly that they didn't trust me on the field with others. So they put me in goal where I was defend. And that was what I was supposed to be doing. But so sorry, I was just chuckling to myself there about.
Yeah, it was not well I love seen, that.
But, yeah, competitive. Mm-hmm. So
if I can just. No, I just wanted to say, if I can just point out, like, you know, we're taught as girls and as women to not be too assertive, too competitive, too aggressive. And I think, you know, that's something that I really hope and I do believe that we're seeing change in. But kind of one of those, what's the word that I'm looking for? But oh my gosh, my words are failing me right now. But one of those lessons that we're just taught as young girls is that, you know, we're not to be assertive. We're not to make a stir or be aggressive. And how unfortunate that was. And I shouldn't say unfortunate because obviously you still played and you probably enjoyed your experience in that. But to be too aggressive, to be on the field, imagine the goals that you would have got and the difference that you would have made on the team if you were that aggressive, right?
Imagine, yeah. So. I actually was just doing a recording this morning of the end of chapter 7, and I was referencing Sheryl Sandberg talking on can't remember what show she was on now, but she was talking about the whole sort of ban bossy movement and banning the word bossy so that girls, weren't considered to be or described to be, bitchy, bossy, all those sort of B words when they actually stepped up into leadership. And I think it was only after someone shared with me, and this was even as recent as 10 years ago, that I had gone to a networking meeting and I hadn't been as warmly welcomed as I thought I would be. And I was kind of surprised. And I asked a colleague at the end, is the group always like this? I'm just not feeling a really friendly vibe. And she said, well, it's because your energy is too aggressive. I'm like, whoa, thank you for sharing. I didn't realize. So I went on a bit of a mission then to shift things up so that it was assertive, but it wasn't crossing that fine line of being aggressive and learning how to do that. And I talk a little bit more about that in my book. So a lot of that is about the energy of reciprocity. So giving the other person a chance to speak first, using more powerful questions. So I demonstrate my expertise and my depth of knowledge based on the question I ask versus talking about myself. So concepts like that, we can shake things up when we're aware. So that is the key, is awareness, first point of change, right?
Mm-hmm. Completely.
Yeah. So also talking about things that you have learned in leadership in being a Tim Hortons mm-hmm. franchisee. So what would be some of the key lessons that you've been lucky enough to learn in that role and also that are worth sharing with some of the other women who are thinking about stepping into, maybe it's a franchisee role, maybe it's a leadership role with your own organization. What are some of the key things you had to learn along the way and some important components or maybe stories that you would like to share?
Mm-hmm. No, and thank you for asking that. I think, I really pride myself on developing a team that shares my values, shares my goals and my ambitions. And really, truly, kind of stepping away from that traditional role of, I don't want to say leadership, but just how a restaurant would operate or, my Tim Hortons restaurant would operate. And I've focused so much on empowering my team and developing, everyone from the front line to the kitchen to my supervisors, my managers and upwards. But just really empowering them and giving them a voice as opposed to kind of leading by example as opposed to by rule. And, with my managers, for example, because I want to utilize this platform that I have across Canada to make a difference, especially in our communities and, hopefully around the world, they need to be on board. They need to share those goals and share those values. And so I think my biggest, lesson in teaching would be, build a team that supports you based on, those kind of factors, as opposed to just necessarily the qualifications that they might have or, just filling a role or a position, I suppose. So that would be one. But honestly, I think being a woman and trying to find my way through, I'm just going to call it, it's still a man's world. I really do believe, even in my industry, that it's very much a male-dominated roles or world. So trying to find my place where I can make that difference and stepping up is really huge. But I'm trying to think, like, leading by example, always. I have done every position, every job, dirty, disgusting, you name it. I have done everything in my restaurant because I will never ask somebody to do something that I haven't personally done myself. Mm-hmm. And, I believe that wholeheartedly. And I can remember one moment, and it's a little bit disgusting, but it's exactly to my point. Somebody had vomited all outside of the restaurant, and one of my kids, he was just young, a teenager at that point, he was like, "Cara, I'm not cleaning that up." And I was like, "Yeah, you are." I'm like, "But we'll go out together." So we grab the gloves, we grab the shovel, and like all the disgust, all the tools, And we did it together and took it out to the garbage and scrubbed it all up. But in that moment, I was just like, this is a teachable moment, right? I had the opportunity to showcase that I'm not above doing the nitty gritty, the gross, disgusting work as well. But we do it together because teamwork, you know, it makes the dream work, which I hate that saying, but it was kind of funny. But also, you know, I mean, there's a million lessons, and I'm sorry that I'm failing at trying to really narrow down specifically to any, but it comes down to that, you know, you learn so much about yourself, because I think being a leader is, it is quite literally one of the loneliest places in the world, because you are cheerleader, you are therapist, you know, you're there for everyone that works with you and around you, but who do you have cheering you on? Right? So on those days, it's learning to become your own biggest cheerleader and giving yourself a pat on the back when, you know, you're exhausted and you're tired. And like, there are many days where I'm just like, somebody just give me a pat on the back, right? Or, you know, just tell me that you're doing a great job. But most of the time we don't have that. So I would really say that it's learning to trust yourself, to stand up for yourself and to advocate for yourself, but to honor yourself and to, you know, to be your own cheerleader for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm just curious now with what you shared there, are there a lot of female Tim Hortons franchisees, owners?
There are now. I would say though that it's probably still a very, you know what, I'm not even going to share a number because I don't want to just guess a number, but I would say definitely it's still very much a male-dominated industry. Yeah. And a perfect example, I actually ran for our advisory board a couple of years ago, whenever the last election was. But the year that I ran, there was only men on the board. We didn't have a single woman across Canada. And it was a little bit embarrassing, to be totally honest. I think corporate did a great job in showcasing that to us and being like, hey, like, just so you know, this is your entire team and this is who is representing you. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, there was no diversity at all. So after that, after they really kind of brought it into focus, women, we had quite a few women run and were nominated and chosen. I was not, but I actually am very thankful because the person that, that did win in my region, you know, he's like my Tim Hortons big brother. He's somebody that I can speak so highly of, and if I was going to lose to anybody, I was happy that it was him.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, it's always great to be able to have mentors that, you know, I believe that it's, as women in business, we need both perspectives. So having a female mentor and having a male mentor as well, huge mm-hmm. difference in the perspectives that you'll get in those conversations. I have a strategic career circle that I use when I'm working with women who are in corporate roles, and definitely includes obviously having a, you know, having their manager on side with what it is that they're working towards in their career objectives, but also having, you know, one or two mentors, two or three peers who know what caliber of work you do and are willing to sort of brag you up, if you like, and look out for when there's opportunities coming up that you might not have heard about yet for promotion. To have a, sorry, just had a little message pop up there about, I don't want to be installing updates right now. Also to have a coach, and even to have an image consultant, I think is an important piece for women, because there's so much that we can do to assert our authority level with how we show up. Part of it is that energetic presence. Part of it is the power words, the language we use, whether we're being directive or whether we're, you know, asking and, you know, using a lot of please and could you and possibly. And the power words and the power phrases are usually quite short, which is one of the differences if we think about how men introduce something and how women introduce it. A lot of times women feel like they got to give the backstory, and sometimes the backstory comes out first and then the actual topic comes out. I realized when I was recording or when I was writing my book that that's actually how I did a lot of things. So I would justify it first and then tell it. And then I realized doing writing, I got to change this up myself. Here I am talking about, you know, having powerful language for women, and I'm learning along the way. Words, though, what I did also see by the time I got about halfway through the book is that the words that we use are a reflection of how confident we feel inside about ourselves. So I'm glad that you've shared about that piece as well, the importance of showing up and still putting your name in the hat, honoring whoever was the chosen person for that role. Also, though, it drew the spotlight on the fact that there was a lack of diversity. And so good for you that you put your hand in the ring, because otherwise that might not have been really evident. Even when I put the book cover together, I had two ladies on the front cover. It was only when I actually interviewed a 5-foot woman who is an incredibly powerful woman, Jenny Abdullah Golamani, who is went on to be the president for BPW in Canada. And she's, by her own definition, Muslim Asmali woman. And I realized, oh, shoot, I better get some diversity on the cover. And then when I went to speak at the Fearless Women's Conference in 2018, which was probably the first place that I publicly talked about the book and what was coming up, pre-sold 85 copies. I didn't even have the book ready yet. One of the ladies who was the final keynote of sort of final wrap-up was actually from Oprah Winfrey's leadership group, and she looked exactly like the lady on the cover. Exactly. Even she came up and said, "Wow, that's me." So
I love that.
So I think that whole conversation has really flourished in the last few years, whether it be because of, you know, the injustices that have been happening in the States, or whether it's finally that the light bulb has gone on that everybody has a contribution to make, no matter what race, religion, sex, the color of their skin, etc. And it's up to us to, as you said, look at what's happening in your world and choose that you're going to do something now for yourself, and you're going to become the person that you want to be. So I honor that in you. Thank you so much. We said that we would also offer a couple of gifts for the listeners. So in your case, obviously you're a Tim Hortons franchisee owner, and just I don't think we've talked about whereabouts is your location, by the way, in case we've got listeners that say, I want to go down to that one.
Oh, I love that so much. So my restaurant is in Binbrook, and that's in Ontario, but we are part of Hamilton, Hamilton Wentworth. So pretty much literally halfway between Toronto and Niagara Falls. So if we have any listeners that are in my area, please come visit.
Come on down. All right. So there is also an opportunity. I think the best way to do it is if you hear this and say, oh, I want that now, then there's two things that we're going to give away. One is a Tim Hortons gift card, and that's something that will be a gift from Cara, and also a copy of my best-selling book, also a gift from Cara. So that is Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. So that's a hard copy. Well, I say hard copy. It's actually a paperback, but it's the physical copy as opposed to the audio copy. And then just know that if you are an audiobook reader, you're a busy mom and you want to have an opportunity to listen, that is coming out, and I will also keep you posted on that. So best way to do it is email me. Email actually my team at admin, at wordswomenandwisdom.com. And it's spelled out A-N-D versus an ampersand. So admin@wordswomenandwisdom.com. Any final comments in our last few seconds together here, Cara?
I just want to thank you for having me on your show. I have loved chatting with you. I think that it's been such a wonderful experience, and I appreciate being able to share my story. I know that many women have had hardships and gone through obstacles, and I think at the end of the day, hearing stories and knowing that we can get through them makes all of the difference in the world, for sure.
It does, and it's one reason I'm passionate about working with women entrepreneurs who are mission inspired or have a service based, heart centered business, but it's a business and they are out there in the world doing amazing things. So thank you today for joining me. It's been a pleasure and I look forward to staying connected. Bye for now.